Session number 28934, Len Trevelyan, part 1.
Len, tell me about your early life, please.
Well, I was born on the 13th of November 1914, just after the outbreak of the First World War. It was in Walthamstow in the northeast of London, on the outskirts of Epping Forest. As I remember, I was told it was at the home of my maternal grandmother, Mrs. Reed, who then lived at a house 968 or something like that in Forest Road, Walthamstow. The house no longer exists, but I remember seeing it as a lad. It was a pleasant, fairly large detached house with an arched front porch in red bricks behind which was the front door. It was probably only for the time of my mother's confinement that I stayed there, because after that we moved to a house above my grandfather's workshop in Victoria Road, Walthamstow, where he was in the process of building a large number of small terraced houses. And when I visited this site a number of years ago, I remember seeing one of the houses. It was called Leonard Villa, and the other one was called Reginald Villa, which was the name of my father's younger brother. I remember an incident in that little house or apartment above the workshop at Victoria Road. One was when I lost one of my very early toys. I had a little horse cart with a jockey on it, or a little jogging cart with a little jockey on it, and it was trodden on. I remember being disappointed about the loss of that toy. And then I remember another incident there when I put my hands on a I got my hands on a bucket of distemper and painted the greyhound dog which we had as a pet. Anyway, I think it must have been soon after living at Victoria Road that we moved close by to a house in Spruce Hill Road, number 107 Spruce Hill Road. This was quite an elegant house with three good bedrooms and a bathroom and other accommodation in the attic, to which there was a second staircase. I remember sleeping up there at one stage, but most of all I remember having a Hornby train set laid out on the floor of the attic. This had been a Christmas present, although it was second hand, I know, when it was bought, as was a Meccano set that I had it on another Christmas present. And I know in the early stages of both of these presents, I think my father had as much fun from them as I did. I remember that on the Christmas morning that I had the Meccano set, I came downstairs to see a wonderful construction of Tower Bridge, with moving drawbridges and all the parts moving, but sadly every part of the set had been used up, and it was ages before I was allowed to take the bridge to bits before I could play with it. It was at 107 that I spent most of my school years. First at the local council school in Beresford Road. I still think it exists even to this day. This was a traditional school for a built-up area, three or four stories high, with asphalt playgrounds, outside toilets, and a lean-to shelter with seats along the wall at the back, on which we played numerous games, mostly of two sides, one trying to push the other lot off, and as we fell off, so you got to the back and started pushing again, because this exhausted us completely. So when we went back into the classroom, this suited the masters, because we were all clapped out by that time. I can't remember being ever unhappy at school. Anne was making good progress, apparently. It was hoped by my parents that I'd eventually get a scholarship to go to Sir George Monoch's Grammar School, which was quite close by. However, it was at this time in my schooling that I had an accident. It was quite a serious one, had a bearing on a lot of my life. I was about 8 or 9 years old, coming home from school. I think I was playing pickaback with another boy when a savage bull terrier broke loose from the rear of a greengrocer's shop, where it was kept as a guard dog. It ran out and attacked me, I was knocked to the ground and I was mauled all over the legs, and I have the scars today of that mauling. I think the dog apparently had been on a chain and broke loose, and I was the first person it saw when it broke out of the yard. It tackled me until it got enough out of my leg to go away and eat it. It was also a bad time because my father at that time, I've been told, was in bed with septicemia and near to dying. However, my mother managed to get an old pram from a neighbour. She came down not far to where I was lying in someone's front garden or house and picked me up in the pram and took me home. And fortunately, I suppose it was fortunate that my next door neighbour was in the St. John's Ambulance Corps. And he poured neat Lysol into all my wounds, including a gaping hole in my right thigh. And I don't really remember the circumstances. I was taken to Walthamstow Hospital, and there I was kept for 5 weeks. And the method of mending this wound was by strapping strong sticking tape on either side of the wound and drawing it together and burning the centre out until it were near enough to heal. Although, as I say, I've still got a big scar in my leg even today. It didn't handicap me in latter life, because I was able to join the police force later and the Air Force, and no one took any heed of this. I remember that one of the incidents in the hospital, one of the nurses put me to bed with a hot water bottle beside me. And when I woke up the next morning, I had a blister as big as a chicken's egg on my wrist. The matron went for that poor nurse, worse than any sergeant major. I also remember a visit from an old aunt who bought me a box of stuffed dates. They were taken away and I never saw one of them. The ward I shared was with another little boy who had something wrong with his knee. We pulled out threads of our towels and then put little things and messages on them and poured them across between each other. And one morning he wasn't there, and I had told that he'd died from septicemia. And another little thing I remember from the hospital is that lying in there, I saw a big black cloud roll over, and after that I was asleep. So I always assumed then that the night came by a big cloud rolling over the sky.
Len, how old would you have been at this time?
8 or 9. I eventually recovered so that I could return to school. But Dad had to go to the school, and despite my young age, I had to wear long trousers, which he got permission for, but it made me a little bit isolated from the other lads with this wound on my leg. And I lost a lot of the critical teaching time during that time in hospital, because it covered the time when we apparently were transferring from fractions to decimals. And when I returned, people were talking about decimals, and I didn't know what they were talking about. Instead of asking what it meant, I hid my ignorance and eventually made sense of it, but it certainly held me back more than I realized. At the end of my elementary school, I took an exam, which I suppose is now the 11 plus. I was given a scholarship to go to the grammar school, but not high enough to go free, so Dad had to contribute a portion of the fees. There must have been a lot of other expenses which I didn't really think about or didn't concern me at the time, such as school uniforms and sports gear, etc., plus a bicycle, which I had to get to school on. But I had them, and now I know how, I realise now how hard it must have been for my mum and dad to supply those things in the First World War, when everything was so expensive. And this, well, just after the First World War, and this must have been in the 1924 or 1925 time. I wasn't very bright at any particular subject except art, which I thoroughly enjoyed. New subjects like Latin and French I enjoyed in a way, I think because it was a way of showing off to the other lads who hadn't got scholarships.
Len, although you were young, do you remember anything of the First World War?
Yes, I do. Not very much, but I remember that it must have been when we were staying with my grandfather at his house at Hatton Lodge, Wyatt's Lane, that there was, during air raids, we were taken to the grounds or to the basement of a convent which was close by until the raid was over. Then we were brought out. And I remember on one occasion being shown a Zeppelin in the sky. It was pointed to me as being over Whipps Cross. It was lit up with searchlights. And that vividly stays in my mind, but I didn't realise that it was dropping bombs or anything like that. And I also remember that being taken to show a street bonfire close by, which must have been VE or the Victory Day after the close of the war. And that I remember, a lovely bonfire with lots of people around it. But really, the war didn't have much significance to me. And fortunately, we lost no relatives in the war, no casualties. So we weren't hit like some families were with loss of their fathers and so on. But my grandfather was a master builder, and building a number of houses in Walthamstow. And my father was persuaded to start a builder's merchant business, which he did in Wood Street, Walthamstow. But this was at the time of the Depression. And many of the small builders who got their supplies from us, they were, of course, allowed to have... Well, they always demanded credit. They couldn't pay for a job until it was completed. But at the end of their commitment to the firm, they couldn't pay their bills, and these accumulated to some colossal sum in those days, a number of thousands of pounds, which we couldn't recover, and my father had to stop the business and close it down. And it came for me to decide what career I wanted to do after that.
Had you been working with your father up until that point?
Yes, I had. Instead of going on to university or anything like that, I went into his to help him in the business and thoroughly enjoyed it. Handling, cutting glass, handling, choosing paints for people and wallpapers and things like that. Selling brushes and timber and many things. But anyway, I couldn't carry on in it, and so I decided that I would like to join the Air Force on a short service commission or the police force. And my father said, well, let's go up to town and see how you make out, get the application forms. So on this particular day, we drove up to town and we happened to arrive, whichever route we took, but we happened to arrive at Scotland Yard first. And I remember going up the steps of Scotland Yard and seeing the desk sergeant standing inside, and told him I'd like to have application forms for joining the police force. And he said to me, you're a lucky lad. He said, there's an interview board here today. He said, step on those scales and see if your weight is right. And he stood me up against the wall and said, yes, your height's all right too. He said, you come back this afternoon and you can go to the interview board, which was held down in a basement or somewhere below Scotland Yard. I went away with my father and had some lunch and came back in the afternoon and first of all had a medical. They looked at my legs, I think, to see if I had varicose veins and all that sort of stuff. And
do you remember, did they pass comment about the scars from the...
No. I told them that I'd been bitten by a dog in my younger years, but they said, no, well, that's no problem. It's healed out beautifully. And I had a written test. I remember having a written test, and that was all right, you know, because as a grammar school boy, essays and things had been part of our training, so the written test was okay. And at the end of the day, I was told that I'd been accepted, and that I'd been informed when I would have to attend Peel House.
What year was this?
1934. So it was in either just after Christmas or in the new year of 1935 that I went up to Peel House. And, you know, in those days we had to get, I think it was a dozen white stiff collars and have a trilby hat on and boots. We had to have boots. And it was a pretty stiff, vigorous time being trained at Wielhaus in those days, but most enjoyable. And I made friends with a Welsh lad, Norman Jones, while I was there, and a few pub crawls around Victoria and so on. We enjoyed a glass of beer. And then it came towards the end of the 13 weeks course there when Norman said, he said, Trev, he said, I am a keen rower. He said, if you say you're keen on rowing, we might get a posting to a riverside division so that we could, so that I could take up my rowing again. He had been a member of the TAF Rowing Club in Cardiff. Anyway, we adopted this policy of, well, I said that I was keen on rowing too. And sure enough, when our postings came out from Peel House, instead of going to the East End, as many did, we were posted to Putney on the River Thames. And when we arrived there, of course...
Sorry, then, before we go on to that, can you tell me about the sort of things that you did at Peel Centre, the training that you got?
Well, if I can remember, yeah. One vivid incident stands out in my mind. Before the end of the course, we were taken down to the Horse Ferry Road mortuary. And the mortuary keeper there, we had the whole class spread around the walls, and he took us around to the various drawers and opened and showed us bodies that had been recovered from the river, and suicides and accidents and unusual deaths and so on. And I remember that in the centre of the mortuary was the slab with the body on it, covered with a sheet. And after we'd been in there a while and seen most of the exhibits, this mortuary keeper, obviously on cue, said, well, you must forgive me, lads, now I'm going to have my lunch. And thereupon he took his little bag out and his flask, and he put them on the end of this centre bench and threw back the cloth and exposed a pair of a dead man's feet sticking up with a label on it. And half the class peeled over. And anyway, that was a lesson that stood me in good stead later on in my career on a number of occasions when I had to face up to dead bodies. But anyway, this was one little incident. Another incident that I remember was the fact that I had to be vaccinated again because my first vaccination apparently hadn't taken. We were told before we went that we had to be vaccinated, and my doctor gave me a dose, but it didn't seem to take.
What was that for?
I suppose chickenpox, was it? I think we had vaccinations on our arms in those days. I think it was for chickenpox. Anyway, I had this. The doctor attended Peel House, and he said, I'll make sure this one takes, and he emptied a whole file or something into my arm and rubbed it in and said, that'll take. Well, it didn't. The next 24 hours I was violently sick, went straight to my stomach and out again, and the vaccination didn't take. And even when I went into the Air Force many years later, and vaccination didn't take, so it appears that I'm immune from vaccinations. And this, of course, put me back a little bit in class because it meant I was in bed for one or two lessons in Peel House. Anyway, I made it eventually, and as I say, posted to Putney, which was very fortunate for me in many respects. But we were put in the section house first at Wandsworth, above the stables, or next to the stable at Wandsworth Police Station.
What was the accommodation like there?
Which was, large dormitories with little partitions in between. We had our bed, a side cupboard, a little rack, and a cabinet for putting our things in. Side by side, open roof, and like stalls in a cattle shed. And we had a mess room down below with large benches and a large table. We had to cook our own breakfast, but there was a section house lady who came in and cooked us lunch. I remember that. We had a cooked lunch either before going on early before going on late turn or after coming back from early turn.
And what was the food like?
I can't remember much about the food. It was substantial and it was sufficient. But I remember an old boy, Arthur Edinburgh, he used to love kippers, and he'd fry kippers until they were hard, bony hard, and put them in a couple of slices of bread, and eat them as a sandwich, a kipper sandwich. No bones and everything that appeared to go into it. But I wasn't in that long before they'd rebuilt, or before they'd built the police station at Putney, which was in the process of being built when I joined. And after that was built, of course, we moved over into the section house at Putney, so that we didn't need to travel the couple of miles each morning for early turn or late turn, whatever it was.
And was the accommodation any different at this brand new section house?
Oh, it was a super. We had our own individual rooms, bedroom, chair, mirror, wash basin and so on, with a mirror behind it, and lovely libraries and gyms and all the facilities that you could wish for. But sadly, between the length of my joining and now at the age of 87, that section house has been demolished and Putney Police Station has been demolished. So I've seen in my lifetime the building and the destruction of Putney Police Station, which is a sad thing because it was a lovely building. And, of course, I can tell you the circumstances of my first duty at at Putney. The procedure was that when you posted to a police station, you spent the first 3 weeks learning beats. In other words, at parade time, early turn, late turn, and night duty, one of the senior policemen could have, you know, been as old as 25 or 30 or 35, you thought of them as old-time policemen, and they would take you around and show you the beats and the extent of them, the way you had to work them. You had to do them in certain directions, go up certain streets and down others and round, and then call in at police boxes, which were in existence in those days. You know, the police boxes like there are in Doctor Who. You know, we had police boxes at strategic points all around each subdivision.
What was inside those police boxes?
There was a telephone back to the station. There was a diary which you had to record when you went into it. There was a first aid box and a stool and a little bench. And there was an outside flap, an outside door which led to a little telephone standing there, so that if a member of the public wanted to speak to the police station, he could do so. And there was, of course, a flashing light on the top, because if the station wanted to contact you on the beat, the flashing light on the top would be, you know, you'd have to answer, respond to that on the call. And I did my 3 weeks, 1 week early turn being taken around the beats, another beat late turn being taken around the beats, and another beat night duty being taken around. Of course, in those days, we worked a six-day week. And when you were on early turn, of course, you had to be at the station at least 20 minutes beforehand. You had to read all the police orders and the unattended premises and stolen car list. You had to make a list of all the stolen cars. And these went all into your notebook. Or you had a stolen car card, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, on the, and you entered the stolen cars in the numbers with the letter. I forget how the car indexes were in those days, but anyway, we probably had 20 or 30 stolen cars at the most, and we were expected to remember those and walking around and try and spot them if we saw one on the side of the street, which we occasionally did. So we paraded 20 minutes before the duty was, and then we fell in the parade room, and we were given the latest information and told of events which might happen and so on, and went out on our beat. And halfway through, and at an appointed time, we had a half hour's break, which we could either, if we were on a beat adjacent to the police station, we could go in and have it there. If not, we had to take our break in the police box. And we had sandwiches or something like that, a flask of coffee, which, a flask of tea as it was in those days. We had our half hour break, and then when it came to the end of the tour, we couldn't go into the police station until the previous relief had come out of the station. So there was the ground then was never uncovered. As one relief came out, so the next relief could go in. And we had it to hand in our pocketbook to the station officer there, who would read them. And if there was anything wrong, they were thrown at you and you were told to rewrite the report again. And so often it was 10:30, or at least a half an hour after your booking off time, before you were allowed to go home.
What were the actual hours of the shifts?
From 6 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock lunchtime.
And that was called early turn?
Early turn. From 2 until 10 at night, night time, and from 10 until 6 in the morning, night duty. And all of those reliefs, as you realise, were virtually a 9-hour release from the time you got the booking on. If you were legitimately detained for some, like an arrest or something like that, were kept at the station longer than your booking off time, you were allowed to put it on your time off card. And you could accumulate time off and ask for it at an appropriate time if there was a convenient number of officers on duty to allow you to take time off. But this was, you know, the office, the station's decision, and not at yours when you had to take your time off.
Was there any overtime payments, or was it just time off in lieu?
I think if they couldn't give you the time off in lieu, you were allowed to get overtime payment, but not as a general practice. There was one other concession. If you were a sportsman of any sort, you were allowed 4 hours time off on a Saturday. MPAA. If you were representing the police in any sport, football, hockey, running, athletics, whatever, rowing, you were allowed time off, 4 hours time off. And so you came on at 6, went off at 10, and participated in your sport.
And that was Metropolitan Police Athletic Association.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned how I learnt beats. On the fourth week after learning beats, I was posted to Putney High Street Patrol. I remember this very, very impressively, this first week duty. I walked down Putney High Street, and as we were required to do on the way down, I tried shop doors to see that there was no shop doors left open, or to see that there was nothing wrong with any of the premises on the way down the street. And then at the bottom of Putney High Street, on the foot of Putney Bridge, there was a police box. I think it was box number 53 or 54, something like that. And I went into the police box and did the usual things, emptying the ashtray out, putting the new date in the diary and phoning up the station saying that lines, light and equipment were correct. And while doing this, there was a little tap on the door of the police box. And I opened it and there was a cyclist standing there, and he said, "Governor, I think you'd better go and look over the bridge over there." There were a couple of cyclists looking over the parapet of the bridge on the far side. So I went across and looked across, and I could see a bulk or a body just lying in the edge of the water. So I walked down the steps, and the foreshore was terribly muddy in those days, slime and sludge right up to the waterline. So I rolled my trousers up and walked across to this body floating in the edge of the water. And because it was face down, I reached with my foot and turned it over onto its back. And as I did so, all the air exuded from its lungs and shot up in the air, and I shot up about 6 feet away in shock. I'd never seen anything like that before. But by this time, I looked up to the the bridge, and I could see about 20 or 30 people all looking down, wondering what I was going to do then. So I thought, well, I better pull this body up out of the water a bit so where I can see what it's all about. And as I did so, its arm came out of its socket. It had been in the water that long. Anyway, I went back to the box and phoned up for a police van to come. They had a rubber sheet in the police van that we could use to contain bodies in. So the driver came down, and together we got this body onto this sheet. And he said to me, he said, "Trev," he said, "never do that again." He said, "If ever there's a body in the river, push it back in and call the Thames police." He said, I don't know whether it's half a crown or 7 and 6 for pulling a body out of the river. And but I never had to do that again, thank God. But